Anyone who has had to sort through laundry to try to match socks knows that it can be an infuriating task.
Or maybe not so infuriating if you can figure out a systematic way of matching sizes and colors in the heap before you.
Our guest, a data visualizer, says this is a prime example of algorithmic thinking. And while that might seem like something just math whizzes do, apparently we all actually use pretty complex math every day. If we didn't, we wouldn't be able to pair those socks in the laundry or navigate our way around a supermarket or keep up with our email load.
Ali Al-Mousawi joins us now. He's the creator and maintainer of the popular and illustrated book of Bad Arguments. His latest book is Bad Choices, How Algorithms Can Help You Think Smarter and Live Happier. Ali, welcome to Central Time.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure.
Your new book, it's called Bad Choices. What are these bad choices we make that get us into trouble and make our lives sometimes a little complicated or miserable?
Yeah, absolutely. The title comes from one of the ways that algorithms are described in literature in terms of goodness and badness with respect to efficiency. So when I was thinking about the question of how to make algorithms compelling to the broadest audience, I realized that there are things we do in everyday life that kind of fit the definition of an algorithm. And therefore, we can use some of the tools that computer scientists use to evaluate if two algorithms are good or if one is better than the other, and use that tool, for instance, to do the same to evaluate everyday decisions that we make.
And how would you explain what an algorithm is?
An algorithm is typically defined as a series of unambiguous steps. It has a beginning, it has an end, and it does something useful. So if you think about websites and apps that we have nowadays, there are a ton of algorithms behind the scenes encapsulating all the logic that you see as features on a website, for instance. And, they have to be unambiguous because computers, they don't have the ability fundamentally to reason about things. They have to, they simply process instructions. So if we want something like predictability from them and efficiency ultimately, then we have to be clear with those steps.
And you reference a computer scientist who spoke of good algorithms, which helped lead you to the title of your book. How can we judge whether a particular algorithm is good or whether it's bad?
Yeah, it has to do with what quality we care about. So in this case, and throughout the book, you'll notice that the quality that's top of mind and highlighted all the time is efficiency. So when we talk about good approaches and bad approaches, we mean with respect to efficiency.
So let's step through one of these approaches with one of the examples in your book. And that one is navigating the grocery store. And I spend a lot of time on this particular algorithm because it pertains a lot to my life and anyone else who goes to the grocery store. But walk me through this algorithm.
Sure. So the nice thing about that and other chapters is that there is no claim that one way is better than all other ways. There's a kind of a discussion of the relative benefits of each. So in the case of being in a grocery store, you have these aisles that you have to traverse, and it's a problem that you see in computing as well. How do you traverse a graph of things? So if you look at a grocery store as a graph, how would you go from one point to another if you care about efficiency? And the key there is a theme that we see in other chapters as well. It's trying to use something like memory, which is to say avoiding repetition, avoiding walking along, the same aisles over and over again. And that's partially how you achieve efficiency. Another component to it is how you organize your shopping list. Like you organize it in terms of proximity to the entrance, and you categorize them in terms of kind of the categories that you find in the grocery store, and so on. So that's kind of the theme and the insight that you get from each of the chapters. It's a discussion of kind of the connection to computer science from everyday life and also the alternative ways that you could go about doing something and how do those ways compare.
But in that example, you could waste a lot of time. I think it was 40 minutes by using the algorithm that wasn't as efficient.
Absolutely, because of repetition. And, that memory, there's another chapter, the very first chapter, in fact, where you see the effect of using memory in a good way. So with the sock example that you mentioned at the outset of the segment, In that case, there are these two methods that we could use to go through a pile of socks. And simply by kind of adjusting the way we do that, we can turn the we can make the approach much more efficient from a quadratic time approach to a linear time approach. Which if you graph them, as two separate lines, you see how they compare.
It makes the laundry pile and those socks. Do you think in different ways when you go around your house, Ali? I mean, really, what goes through your brain?
Yeah, it's interesting because when I started this project, I wasn't thinking in terms of, what do I do in my life and could I model those as algorithms. I started from the other end. I thought, these are the fundamental algorithms that exist in computing. Is there a way to map them to everyday life? And it's only when I did that I was able to kind of think about these things that I do every day, these mundane things in terms of algorithms.
We're talking right now with Ali Al-Moussaoui. His new book is Bad Choices, How Algorithms Can Help You Think Smarter and Live Happier. Ali, there's a point in your book where you say algorithms are artistic, they're graceful, they have elegance. What are you talking about? How are algorithms artful?
Yeah, that comes partially from a segment I watched a long time ago, back when I was in high school, I think, maybe 15 years ago or so. A BBC reporter asks Richard Feynman the same question. He says, I forget what the question was, but the answer was, or the topic was, is science as beautiful as a piece of art, a drawing or a painting or a flower that someone might see and appreciate? And the answer he gave was great. He said, you see the same kind of elegance everywhere in the world. It doesn't have to be, it could be manifest in equations, or it could be manifest in this case in an algorithm, right? The way it's structured, the way the logic kind of ties together, the efficiency of it. There are all these factors that contribute to beauty, and I think that's what I was referring to.
And you use illustrations heavily in your book to illustrate the points of these algorithms, and they're really clever. Why did you decide to do that?
Yeah, the illustrations, they're by my collaborator Alejandro Geraldo, and he's very talented. We've been working together for 4 years now, and you're right. Illustrations are when I think about a project, I don't think of it in terms of the implementation. Right? I don't say this is something that I want to implement in code or in writing or in something else. I think of what's the best way to present this, and usually it's a combination of things. So it so happens that in this project and in the previous one, Bad Arguments, marrying text with illustrations was the best way to produce something that's compelling and useful. And so I remember even when I sent the manuscript to the publisher, it had my own sketches of the various illustrations, because I feel they're essential to the message I'm trying to convey.
Let's take a call now. Becky in Beloit. Hi, Becky.
Hey, I work at a library, and we're trying to go through a one service model thing, which it wasn't my original call, but, great segue. Anyhow, I went to the grocery store today, and when I make a list, I make it because I want to get through fast. So I make a list on how I'm going to start and go from there, and I go around the outside walls and then up and down the aisles. I never hit anywhere twice. Making a list is great for memory, because then you don't have to look at it very often because you've kind of already memorized it. So I just thought that was a great idea. And, the way you navigate, the spaghetti diagrams and stuff like that is really, it's a great topic. So thank you.
Ali, what about going on the outer edges, and what about the path she takes?
Yeah, that's great. I mean, if it works for you, if it's efficient, if you don't, if there is minimal repetition, then that's one way of achieving efficiency. And I ought to say that there are, if you read about this topic in the literature, you'll find that there are sophisticated techniques for traversing graphs, that are bigger than a grocery store.
You point out that speed is not always a virtue. In which cases would being slow be a plus?
Yeah, one area is learning, for instance. Another is if you want to be creative, or if you just want to soak something in. You don't really care about finishing it or maximizing or optimizing for efficiency. You know, usually when we talk about efficiency, it's because we want to do something in the shortest amount of time or you know, take up the smallest amount of space. But if we don't care about that quality, then you know, often it might be the case that, you know, slowness is a virtue. And learning is a perfect example. I know in my case, at least, sometimes it takes me a long time to understand something, and I've seen that over and over again in the books that I read and in you know, in people I talk to. So that's one case where, you know, a teacher who tries to look for fast learners and then ignore the rest, I think they're missing something important.
One chapter goes into how we can streamline our work, make our work faster, get through more stuff in the day. Can you quickly run through that?
Yeah, sure. There are multiple topics in that chapter.
Yeah.
One is talking of, you know, how do you prioritize? Do you prioritize by ease? Do you prioritize by some other dimension, some priority that you've come up with? Do you context switch? You know, do you spend an hour or some on something and then another hour on something else and then go back to the first thing and so on? And the point I make there is that, you know, it all depends on the type of work you're doing. If it's mechanical work or if it's something that requires, you know, creativity or you know, some heavy cognitive thinking and so on. But also the other important point in that chapter is that I wanted to highlight when this approach that I speak so passionately about, you know, focusing on rates of growth and orders of magnitude, when does it break down? You know, there are cases where...
I gotta cut into you there. I'm so sorry, Ollie. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you very much.
That was Ollie Al-Wasawi. He's the author of Bad Choices, How Algorithms Can Help You Think Smarter and Live Happier.